Nowadays, we associate marble with the white marble of Greek antiquity, the Italian Renaissance, or Classicism. We think of the buildings on the Acropolis in Athens or of Milan's cathedral. But the idea of marble in antiquity was very different. At the time, the term was used to describe all polishable stones, including varieties as geologically disparate as alabaster, granite, or porphyry, which have a broad and in some cases vibrant color palette. In part, this view was still commonly held into the 19th century. The history of marble as a material is therefore also a history of variously colored stones. Their difficult extraction, costly transportation, and limited availability made these colored marbles luxury products that were always also a sign of special status and claims to power. In the 19th century, collecting, identifying, and categorizing antique decorative stones became a veritable pastime among the upper classes in Rome. People were fascinated by the outstanding cultural significance of the material. One of these historical collections of ancient Roman colored marbles, the Feliciani Collection, is today housed in the store of the Department of Earth Sciences at ETH Zurich. It is unique in terms of its size, composition, and historical significance. Here is Peter Brack, curator of the Earth Science Collections at ETH Zurich, discussing the Feliciani Collection.
The Feliciani Collection contains almost 800 stone tiles made of ancient marble from Roman buildings in Rome. It was put together by Rome physician Alcio Feliciani in the second half of the 19th century and cut and polished according to his instructions. In 1924, during a trip to Rome, Solothurn industrialist and former National Council member Edward Bali Prior became aware of the Feliciani collection. Bought it for 100,000 lira and donated it to ETH Zurich, which opened its geological mineralogical exhibition the following year and gave the collection its own separate room. The Feliciani collection is one of the largest collections of ancient colored marble. However, the term marble here is actually used to describe virtually any sandable stone used for decorative purposes in the ancient world. It also includes granite, limestone, and alabaster, a broad spectrum in other words. Naturally, this is also evident in the colors and geometries expressed in these pieces of stone. As far as earth science research is concerned, the collection is not significant in itself. The original idea behind showcasing the collection in Zurich was to particularly inspire architects as well as the earth sciences and highlight the kind of possibilities open to them in using natural stone.
Colored marble as a signature of Roman architecture. In classical Greece, approximately 5th century BC, the use of white marble was reserved for public stately buildings and temples. The material symbolized the wealth and prosperity of the community. It was not until the luxurious palaces and mausoleums of the late classical period, 4th century BC, and the Hellenistic period in particular, from the 3rd century BC, that colored marble also started to be used for entire interiors. In combination with other precious materials such as gold, silver, and ivory, the multicolored stones created complex spatial experiences and, of course, also emphasized the special social status of the master of the house. By contrast, the use of marble, both white and colored, in ancient Rome was a relatively late phenomenon, but one that proved to be all the more long-lasting, whereby Roman marble aesthetics influenced the history of architecture across the entire Western world. With the expansion and consolidation of the Roman Empire around the middle of the 1st century BC and the ensuing access to new quarries, but also thanks to the exploitation of white marble from Carrara, the antique Luni, in northern Italy, which is still quarried today, this material was no longer only used for public buildings in Rome either. The blaze of color from colored marbles was now a sought-after status symbol in private residences and luxury villas belonging to the Roman upper classes. Anyone with aspirations had colored marble columns in his home, as well as floors and walls covered with shining, polished colored marble panels identical to those in the interior of a temple. Over time, the use of colored marble became more and more sophisticated, as did the way artists interpreted its materiality and color. The era saw experimentation with all kinds of new techniques, such as marble applications or decorative inlay work, essentially a kind of painting in stone. In the following, Stefan Zink, archaeologist and SNF fellow, talks about the architectural history of colored marble.
Die Architekturgeschichte des Buntmarmors.
The architectural history of colored marble is also a history of color in architecture. And it really begins in Greece during the 7th century BC, when we find the earliest stone constructions, some already in marble. In this early phase, different colored gray and white types of marble were already combined to create color effects. But to achieve stark color contrasts, the architectural elements had to be painted. From the 1st century BC, Rome began to have access to important resources of marble and colored marble in the Mediterranean. And the new import of marble triggered a veritable aesthetic revolution in architecture. People began to clad interiors in colored marble on a grand scale and also add colored marble columns to facades. Characteristic for the Roman approach was the search for variety, varietas, as ancient Romans called it. The goal was to combine and represent as many stones as possible, also to showcase the diversity of nature. The large-scale excavations of the 19th century and the discovery of many ancient sites marked a kind of renaissance of decorative marble. In many places, especially in Rome, where the imperial palaces were unearthed, numerous ancient marble rivetments were rediscovered and documented in colorful drawings. Crucially, also the people who documented these findings, and also those who carried out the excavations, were often architects. As a result, the archaeological finds and observations also influenced the designs of the 19th century, and thus shaped an architectural reality that we still see today.
The staging of stone in the architecture of the 19th century. For the architects and master builders of the 19th century, the decorative stones uncovered during excavations in Rome, based on which collections and corresponding catalogs were created, were an important source of inspiration. The different stones belonged to the canon of ancient architecture and were used or imitated in contemporary buildings of the time. Some of the most important ancient varieties of marble remained available and were quarried sporadically, even after the fall of the Roman Empire. By comparison, others, such as Cipollino Verde, called Marmora Caristium by the Romans, from near Caristus on the Greek island of Euboea, or the purple-red so-called imperial porphyry from Mons Porphyrites in Egypt were well known, but their precise quarrying locations had been forgotten. As part of the reawakened interest in ancient colored marbles, towards the end of the 19th century, the English stone merchant William Brindley went in search of the lost ancient Roman quarries in Greece, Turkey, and North Africa. He negotiated and acquired a number of concessions for quarrying stone, including the above-mentioned Cipollino from Euboea. In 1873, Italy then also exhibited the Feliciani collection, which was still in Rome at the time, at the World's Fair in Vienna. The reaction of the press was euphoric, and Italy was vaunted as having assumed the first rank amongst nations in the showcasing of its stone treasures. A catalog compiled by Emil de Meester de Ravenstein in 1872 for his personal collection of ancient colored marbles gives an excellent insight into the ambitions and intentions underlying the collections of the time. The author wrote that his collection should animate an emulation of the ancients, but not through replication or mere reuse, rather in the form of inspiration. In other words, the ancient stones were to encourage others to discover the treasures in their own countries and to open up new avenues for art and for modern industry. Consequently, the study of these stones was not intended to result in the adoption of ancient building materials, but rather to train and hone a sense for modern building materials. Switzerland discovers its own stone treasures. 5 years after Italy won fame at the Vienna World's Fair for presenting the Feliciani collection, Switzerland displayed its own building stone deposits at the World's Fair in Paris in 1878 and won 4 major prizes and 6 gold medals. The first major national exhibition in Zurich in 1883 also featured the entire wealth of the country's magnificent building materials. Alongside stone specimens, including both decorative stones and solid building stones, the exhibition presented different types of uses and finishing techniques. The stone industry in Switzerland flourished generally in the second half of the 19th century. Significant stone deposits were identified, stone properties systematically tested for the first time, and many new quarries opened. This period marked the heyday for Arzo marble from Ticino, which had already been quarried on a large scale since the 16th century. Moreover, a green-grayish banded marble from Sion in Volos, which showed great similarity to the ancient Roman Cipollino and was discovered in 1873, was soon successfully marketed as Grand Cipollin Antique, Grand Antique de Sion, far beyond Switzerland's borders. The Parliament building of the Federal Palace, Bundeshaus, in Bern, designed by Semper student Hans Wilhelm Auer between 1894 and 1902, is a built manifestation of the country's national stone treasures. Regarding the choice of materials, Auer commented prior to the commencement of the building, "In the interior, the most conventional hard stones and marbles from all over Switzerland have to be called upon in full and without exception. A total of 30 native stones were used in the construction of the Parliament building. Even though these only represent a fraction of the varieties of stone extracted at the time from over 700 active quarries, geographically they represent almost the entire country." Marble in modernist architecture. In the 20th century, the significance of colored marble changed once again. Cement, steel, and glass came to play an increasingly important role as building materials, and the aesthetics of architecture underwent a major transformation. Natural stone, and with it the craft of stoneworking, was becoming less and less popular. Nevertheless, marble never completely disappeared as a surface material, playing a pivotal role, for example, in the architecture of Italian Razionalismo alongside travertine. Listen to Martin Delbecchi, professor of history and theory of architecture at ETH Zurich, discussing marble in modernism.
When marble is used as a decorative material in modernism, it is not sculpted, it is not treated, it's not part of some kind of intricate decorative scheme or program, but it is used mainly, you could say, to emphasize the surface of a building and its volumetry and therefore enhance the play with light, or you could say for its massiveness as sculptural elements of its own that then mark the modernist interior. A good example is, for instance, the Palais Stockley in Brussels. There, the architect Josef Hofmann used white marble, modular sheets of white marble, to basically clad the whole building in one single material, so to emphasize the volumetric composition. In modernism, marble enters into a dialogue with industrial materials like steel, glass, concrete, and also other ways of decorating buildings, like painting. And then it is really used for its intrinsic qualities, its color, its veining, but especially also for its brilliance, its sheen, and sometimes even for its transparency. So marble is really transformed into a kind of modernist building matter. marble retains its association with power and magnificence. For instance, in fascist Italy, propaganda made it very clear that it was important that buildings would be constructed with material from the Italian soil, including marble. So there it becomes at once an ideological issue to build in marble, combined with obviously contemporary technical concerns.
Two of the main protagonists of the international style, Adolf Loos and Ludwig Mies van der Rohe, also use decorative stones familiar from the antique in some of their best-known buildings, emphasizing its pure materiality by using the stone for large surfaces at prominent locations. Adolf Loos chose the aforementioned Cipollino marble for the facade of the ground floor and mezzanine level of the Loos House in Vienna, a material that had in recent years become available again for the first time since antiquity. In a written defense published in the Illustriatus Vienae Extrablatt on 30th September 1910, the architect, who traveled to Eubea himself to select the marble from the quarry, wrote, "Nobody knows yet what this effect will be. Never before has Cipollino marble been used in such volumes. After the fall of Rome, the quarries were forgotten, and now the house at Michaeliplatz is to be the first large building designed in this most beautiful and magnificent of all marble varieties." Like Loos, Mies van der Rohe was the son of a stonemason and grew up learning how to use natural stone. In his Barcelona pavilion, created in 1929 as Germany's contribution to the International Exposition or World's Fair in the Spanish city and regarded as the manifesto of modernist architecture, Mies van der Rohe placed a wall made from North African golden onyx as a freestanding object in the center of the space. The other walls made from Vert Antique and Green Tinos marble from the Greek island of the same name are also arranged as objects. While the aesthetic approach to colored marble and modernist architecture was different from that of prior epochs, the inherent connotations of a sophisticated and precious stone remained, resulting in an air of exclusivity that the material still possesses today. Colored marbles today. Since antiquity, colored marble has been used as a building material in constantly changing aesthetic and historical contexts. It is still available today. The quantities of stone quarried nowadays in Switzerland are far less than in the 19th century, with material for architectural purposes currently extracted from only 75 quarries. For example, the extraction of Artzell marble or Cipolline antique from Sayon ceased completely for lack of profitability due, among other things, to the changing fashions in stone. Marble in the narrower and petrographically correct sense is now only quarried at just one location in Switzerland, white Cristallina marble from Pecha in Ticino's Macha Valley. By contrast, colored marbles as defined by the ancient meaning, i.e. colored, polishable hard stones, are still quarried, including, for example, Rouge de Collonge, Vert de Savant, Andia, and Walser quartzite. All of the decorative stones mentioned here are included in the material collection of ETH Zurich on the Hunkeberg campus, together with other building materials such as timber, ceramics, glass, metal, adobe, lime, plaster, cement, or plastics. By comparing historical building materials with contemporary materials, the aim of the collection is to raise awareness of the significance and context of building materials and encourage a substantive approach to these materials, similar to the intention of the grand decorative stone collections of the 19th century. Closing the story, Adam Caruso, professor of architecture and construction at ETH Zurich, provides insights into the current use of decorative stone in architecture.
I think one definitely can work in stone today, but to make a building using stone today is a different thing than using stone the way that the ancient Egyptians or Greeks or even how architects and builders used stone in the 19th century. I think the economic and political context of all of those ages are fundamentally different. For instance, in 19th century Britain, England was the center of an empire, and therefore resources moved within the empire in a very different way to how they do today. So one could use large amounts of heavy stones and work them in elaborate ways because labor was cheap. I think today labor is not cheap in that way. And although we have globalization as well, it's a different kind of globalization. So for instance, the building that we did for the Museum of Childhood, which is part of the Victoria and Albert Museum, and therefore it is connected to that legacy of empire, we decided to use stone, partially because of this connection to empire that the museum has. We chose stones that did explicitly refer to the British Empire. But the way we handle the stones is not by using massive pieces of stone. They're not worked in an elaborate way by hand. Rather, they're used in very, very thin pieces. And every decision in terms of how to assemble the stone onto the facade has been made in a way to deny the thickness and the weight of the stone. So it's as much like a photograph of a stone facade as a constructed stone facade. And today, if one wants to make stone as a heavy material, I think one has to not use natural stone anymore. One has to use, for instance, precast element like we used, for instance, in our building for the SBB at Europalais. So that is a stone urban facade which is massive, which feels very stony, but which is not actually using big pieces of natural stone.